Curry for setting a screen.
Because of physical play, although Jordan Taylor just got caught with a moving screen.
Izzo dying for a moving screen.
It's that dreaded moving screen.
You are listening to the Moving Screen Podcast. I'm Brendan Quinn of The Athletic. He is Dylan Burkhart of umhoops.com. Obviously, a very impactful day in Michigan basketball. We're going to focus this episode most directly on Xavier Simpson's suspension and all of that kind of goes into it and what it means and blah, blah, blah. So, Dylan, I know you've already written up kind of your thoughts on what it means on the basketball side of things, but I think we kind of have to start, in my opinion, on a little. I wrote about this in a column this afternoon. Like, this is a big, even if it's one game, and even if they go and win, like, you know, having your senior point guard suspended for a game on January 28th is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, I don't know if we should do any more best case, worst case podcasts coming up. I mean, I think we missed the mark on that one.
Good call. What's kind of your reaction here?
I think what you say is definitely true. You can't, whatever happens, like, that's just the kind of thing that you can't have at this point in a season if you're in Michigan, right? Like, everything else has gone wrong for you on the court, so to speak, injury-wise. You can't really make your own problems too at this point, right? And it just makes situation that much worse in a situation that was already looking uphill, right?
Big time. Without the details kind of being released or made public, and I think that will probably gradually happen with time. You hit it. And it's, you can't make your own problems here, and you can't have your own, look, if there was, I think people should look at it this way without, you know, being able to kind of talk in specifics about what's going on. Like, in order for there to be a suspension, there had to have been a bad decision made, regardless of what that bad decision is, right? And Xavier Simpson, who is a guy who has actively kind of tried to take on the character of the team and make the character of the team what he is as an individual. Like, that is something that has very clearly happened since basically midway through his sophomore year, right? I mean, you've been around the program. Do you kind of agree with that?
Yeah, he's played every game of his career. He's gone 3.5 years without making the sort of bad decision that could get him suspended, right? So, and he, since really, I would say, the 2 summers ago, right? He has been this team's heartbeat, so to speak. I think, like, that's when he took over the team as his team, right? He played a big part on that team that went to the Final Four. But starting last year, I think it changed to the point where this was Xavier Simpson's team and he was going to take everyone along for the ride with him.
And embraced it, right? I mean,
without a doubt.
Fully embraced it. Wanted that heat, all that stuff. And now, you know, this. At what is already just a pivotal point in the season where they got to turn this thing around, right? And I think it's pretty clear it's not going to be a snap of the fingers. Everything, you know, is rosy, right? They just start reeling off wins. Like, this kind of, to me at least, feels like, you know, you're turning around a ship, right? That old cliche. It's going to take a lot of work in a lot of areas. And for this to happen on the heels of, what is it, 4 straight losses, 5 straight losses?
4 straight losses. And yeah, you were supposed to start turning the ship around last week, right?
Exactly.
You had 2 home games against teams you're supposed to beat. You're supposed to get Isaiah Livers back. Instead, those ended up 2 losses. Isaiah Livers re-injures himself.
Yeah.
And then this happens, right? Like, instead of starting to turn the ship, you just basically accelerated full steam ahead in the wrong direction. And now you have even further to dig yourself out and less power really to turn it around.
Yeah. I mean, you're right. We were talking last week, right? Oh man, this 8-game stretch, this is it. This is where they're going to decide where their season goes. We're talking, man, 7-1 would be ideal. Now they'd be rocking and rolling. 6-2 would be okay. You know, 5-3 is an ideal. starting 0-2 and having this happen, you're right, did not really register in the fathomable things that would happen in the span of 6 days.
Yeah, I like to say, like, in the Big Ten season, you can overreact to home losses and road wins. So up until Wednesday, I don't think there was much to overreact to from Michigan season, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there was no notable chink in the armor either way. Now you have chinks in the armor and self-induced problems, and you're trying to figure out where the season goes from here.
It's and this game, which suddenly, you know, who would have given a shit about the old, you know, at Nebraska road trip in January, you know, even 2 weeks ago, or certainly not in the beginning of the season. This wasn't a game you wouldn't even looked twice at. Now, holy hell, this is a massive game. It would be a quad three loss, right?
That's correct.
You're going to put David DeJulius in the starting lineup and roll from there and see what happens. On the road in a place that I know Nebraska is not good, but it's a hard place to play. And this team, these guys got to be looking at each other a little bit right now and saying, who the hell is going to do what? Especially if Isaiah Livers isn't out there.
So Nebraska beat the only two Big Ten teams mm-hmm. that Michigan has beat this year. So Nebraska is not good, but they're good enough to win games against decent teams. And they're good enough to beat the two teams that Michigan's beat both at home, right? I mean, it's not like Michigan was going to walk in there and win even with a completely healthy and eligible roster.
What, so on Xavier, you know, and I don't want to just bash him because, you know, he hasn't had a chance to talk. We don't, have, you know, there's no specifics out there. But like, man, I wouldn't say, like, you know, this is I'm not in the position yet to say, you know, this would be a position to tarnish his legacy or anything like that. But how he responds to whatever is going on now takes precedence over everything that's happening at Michigan, in my opinion. What do you think of that?
Everything that's happening at Michigan. What do you mean? Like, are you talking about what his entire legacy ends up is just defined on this, or
this season, what is happening right now? Because this is right. This is the transition year from John to Juwan, and this is a year that could very easily completely spin off the rails here. The season hangs kind of in the balance of what he does with a situation that has him firmly, I think, in the crosshairs of everything from public opinion to, you know, how his teammates look at him.
Yeah, I think you can say pretty comfortably that Michigan without Simpson and Isaiah Livers is a team that is not really shown it's good enough to make the NCAA tournament. So obviously, when Simpson comes back, how he responds to that, what Isaiah Livers' status is, all that matters. Like, at this point, I think you look at Michigan, and the best case is getting hot at some point, mm-hmm. getting healthy, getting Isaiah Livers back, getting Simpson back, and then putting it together for one more run. And if you look at the schedule, obviously there's opportunity to put a run together that would change your schedule, but you're just going to have to win games that would change your schedule, which means they're hard to win.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't see any way that Michigan goes forward and just becomes a better team without Xavier Simpson. He's leading the team in basically everything. He's leading the country in assists right now, right? I mean, so much of this entire team's identity is just Xavier Simpson, whether mm-hmm. it's on either side of the ball. So, yeah, of course, what happens this year depends on Simpson. I don't think there's any disagreement right. there.
I mean, because remember, I think last week we were talking about this team kind of needs to find itself and, you know, create, you know, identity, blah, 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 all that narrative stuff that you love. And, like, this couldn't have been further the opposite. Now it's going to be, you know, what happens if this is a close game late? You know, there's going to be a lot of guys looking at each other.
I think
it's a fascinating dynamic here.
The much larger question is, does Michigan have enough for it to be a close game late? I think you're getting ahead of yourself as far as who's the go-to guy late in the game or whatnot. I don't think that's a big concern, but I mean, Michigan would have been a 6-point favorite on KenPom with Simpson. I assume it's basically going to go down as a 1 or 2 point game either way, right? Like as the spread comes out. I don't know. I think the bigger question is, what does Michigan do on offense? What does Michigan do on defense? Who plays off the bench, right? Like, I'm more curious how they get through an entire game, not how they finish a game.
Right. And is it only one game?
Yes.
Because what did not happen today at the press conference? Juwan Howard did not say, yes, he will be playing against, what would it be, Rutgers at Madison Square Garden on Saturday. Now, he very well might, but it was get through Nebraska, reevaluate, and make a decision from there.
Yeah, I think you said we have to look at this thing deeper and deeper and see what we're going to do moving forward, was the quote. Which does not say...
There's a lot there.
There's a lot there.
Yeah.
And I don't know what... I mean, it's a big spot for David DeJulius, obviously. He's been really good scoring out of ball screens this year. He has not been great passing out of ball screens this year, and his shot selection is not particularly great. He really has struggled to get to the rim and finish, which is the one thing that Simpson does really well. So that will be curious to see what the team looks like if he is the primary playmaker on Tuesday night. Do you think that that's the situation? Do you think he plays more off the ball and you run things through Eli Brooks? How do you see this playing out on the court?
My instinct would be, that's a great question. My instinct would be they start off by giving DeJulius a shot to just step into that role. Remember, you talked a lot about it with when Franz went out. Or when Franz didn't start, right, and they gave Adrian Nunez all those minutes, that it was a matter of, you know, go to the next guy who would be in that spot as opposed to changing everything around that spot. I would, completely guessing.
Yeah.
I would think that that's the first shot, and you have maybe a pretty tight rope on it, right? If things get wonky early, yeah, you just have to give the ball to Eli and kind of let him maybe take that primary ball handling spot over. But I think you gotta give DeJulius a shot here.
Yeah, and the other thing is Michigan had 3 guards for 2.5 spots. Now Michigan has 2 guards for 2.5 spots. So it's not really like you're taking either of them off the court.
Right.
I mean, they're both gonna have to play 35 plus minutes because there's not really another reliable dribbler on the team at this point.
Xavier was playing 37 minutes a game in Big Ten play.
And the time he sat was primarily just for picking up 2 fouls at Iowa.
Yeah.
And I mean, he, like, so much of what this team did defaulted to Xavier Simpson. And I know that there's a lot of people that wanted to see Michigan do some different things on offense. Well, you're going to see that, but I think you're going to miss how well Simpson operates out of ball screens. And I don't really know what that looks like, right? I do think it's worth pointing out that Nebraska is really, really small. And it's just bad in every interior statistic there is. I would not be surprised to see Michigan play through John Teske a lot. They've gone to that more and more, and he's going to have a significant size advantage inside. He's been efficient as a post-up scorer. I think that probably makes a lot of sense. It might be the most touches he has in a game all season to this point. I have no idea what that really looks like in practice, but it seems like something that
it would
you might
be like that UMass Lowell game when he took 14 shots, and it was because the exact same thing. UMass Lowell like didn't have anyone over 6'6", basically, if I remember, and they just kept going to him and going to him and going to him. And
yes,
right. So
same sort of deal.
Yeah,
Nebraska is about as close as it gets to UMass Lowell in the Big Ten.
How would you put this? That the residual effects of not having Xavier. It's not only what he doesn't do, but, you know, he makes the pass that leads to the next pass. Like, so much goes through him. Do you think having him out, are you still confident that they can get all those post-entry looks?
I think they can throw the ball in the post.
I think so,
you're going to struggle to come up with the kind of spot-up jumpers that Michigan missed over and over again over the last week, but are generally good shots, right? I think those are the shots that will be tougher to come up with because of Simpson's dribble penetration. The bigger question is what happens in those possessions where the initial action is somewhat stopped and someone has to make a play late in the clock, right?
Mm-hmm.
Simpson has been doing a lot of one-on-one driving, getting to the basket, scoring with his hook, scoring with the reverse layup. I assume that DeJulius will find the ball in those spots just because he's really the only guy on the roster wired to do that. It's just kind of in his game. I just think a lot of them will be 17-foot jumpers, and that's a scary proposition on the road. I mean,
Yeah. They
go in or they don't go in, but I think you'll see a lot of them. Whereas Simpson was a guy who almost always got to the rim and made that about 50, 55% clip.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I seem to remember DeJulius having a pretty solid second half against Illinois. He made some shots, made some plays. I remember him, you know, he got really into it emotionally a few times, kind of yelling and flexing and doing that stuff. So there's at least a good sign in terms of him maybe at least feeling confident in his game because he was in the wilderness there for a little bit, no doubt.
Yeah, he was fantastic late against Purdue, and then he's been pretty much I think his biggest problem has been he gets in the game and he immediately looks to make a play, which usually results in a jump shot way too early in a possession. He did that bit of that against Illinois early and then settled into what you say, a nice second half, which was, I think, the best you've seen from him.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote about DeJulius, I think, a week ago, and when he was shooting over 40% from three in non-conference play.
Right.
And like all of those makes were coming catch and shoot looks up in the corners, and he wasn't getting any of those shots in Big Ten play because mm-hmm. I think he's taken on more of this playmaking role. So it does bring down his efficiency a bit because he's not getting catch and shoot corner threes when he's going to be one of the go-to creators for this team.
Yeah, what do you think about his ability to kind of play that pure point guard spot? He has no assist in three of his last four games, but he also had four at Iowa. He had six against Purdue. What do you kind of make of that imbalance?
Michigan's stats are basically like every other game and then against Iowa. if you were to do like splits for this team in the Big Ten,
right,
everyone looks like the best offensive player in the world against Iowa. Yeah. Go look up John Teske's assist numbers against Iowa and everyone else. Same deal. I don't know. I think it's fair to say like DeJulius hasn't really gotten a fair chance, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's one thing to come in and play this secondary role and try to make a play. It's another thing to play 30 minutes and be the starting point guard. We don't know what that's going to look like. He can shoot, and he can, but he shoots too often pull up from the elbows, right? I mean, getting him to play an efficient game, I don't know what it looks like. It'll be really interesting to see. I mean, definitely will. If you look long term, see what you've got in DeJulius going forward. It will be a great progress report in that regard.
For sure. I think that's kind of a easily overlooked part of this is, you know, you're a guy like DeJulius, you're talking about audition for, there's going to be massive change on this roster. And where does he fall? I think we all agree there's going to be probably some movement from the current roster. New bodies coming in from all over the place. So, you know, you want to go make a statement about your future value? This would be a really, really good time to do so.
Yeah, I guess the last thing I'd add is Franz Wagner had three of maybe his best ball screen drives mm-hmm. of the season against Illinois. I would not be surprised to see Michigan try to put the ball in his hands a little more. I think he's a more willing passer, and you might look for him in that secondary role and see what you can get started, especially considering how much he's been struggling with his jump shot.
Yeah, so I haven't had a chance to go back and rewatch the Illinois game, but in the first half when he was putting up all of those threes, how much of that was them going under screens and him just being – because they went under screens a few times, but you'd like to see him drive occasionally – if not more and more, but he does seem to sometimes kind of fall into this trap of, especially he sees a guy go under screen, that thing's going up. What do you think of his shot selection right now?
So Illinois was putting Georgie on him.
Right.
And Georgie was not really, it seemed like kind of a similar strategy to what they did in Champaign, where he was content to let him shoot those shots.
Yark.
And early, Franz hit a three that was off of a little ball screen where Illinois just went under and he was wide open. A lot of the ones he shot from there, I mean, I think he shot one quick one that was a bad shot, but he had some really pretty clean looks that I think you want him to shoot. He did get downhill twice for two good drives, which was something you haven't seen a lot of him do and finish effectively. So honestly, it feels like one game Franz makes shots.
Mm-hmm.
Next game, he shows some of those other things that he's supposed to be good at. And then he's just still getting to the point where he can do everything in one game and put it all together. I mean, if you're looking for a consistent perimeter play and you're down to those three guys, basically, you're going to need Franz to have a game at Nebraska, I think, if you're going to try to keep up with this up-tempo Nebraska team.
Right. And I got him at 11th in conference play and offense. Let's talk defensive side of the ball, losing Xavier Simpson. I don't think his has been a great defensive year from Xavier per se, considering his, you know, the reputation as being like the best defensive point guard in the country. I don't know if anyone would say that he's kind of at that level this year. But what, how big of a hole is this? And what do you think of Julius's defense?
So Eli Brooks has been Michigan's best perimeter defender,
right?
Both on and off the ball. Simpson, to me, has developed some bad habits on defense. I think he seems like something he's trying to make up for everything else going on by whether it's like playing free safety and getting caught cheating off the ball, mm-hmm. or just trying to make big plays on defense instead of just like the simple solid plays that should really be the foundation of a defense.
He kind of drifts sometimes when he runs. Yeah, it's weird.
He's been floating around, missing some switches, and I don't know if it's because he's trying to make up for other players around the court who are not usually on the court, and maybe he doesn't trust as much, but he has not been playing as well defensively as you would come to expect. I also think he's playing every minute and using more offensive possessions than he ever has, right? So some regression is inevitable there. But the problem is that there's not like there's some other lockdown defender coming off the bench. I think DeJulius can be a little over-exuberant in his on-the-ball defense, but I think his off-the-ball defense still leaves something to be desired. And the problem is there's no backup, right? I mean, so even if Adrian Nunez is not going to be a defensive upgrade. So there's not like – that's really your big issue defensively is that you don't have anything else, and your depth is already a big issue, and now it's just a greater issue.
Eli on Cam Mack?
Yes.
Because this will be Michigan fans' first look at him, right? They haven't played. Am I crazy?
No, they have not played.
Your boy, Cam Mack, is he will shoot early and often – but he can get cooking and he can fill it up a little bit. He can also
a made basket like Cam Mack.
He can also take a shit ton of shots, but he's a bit of a bucket. He's the leading scorer for Nebraska. But there ain't
a bucket. I like that.
There isn't much to this roster though.
So I actually like I'm a big Nebraska fan. I think they're on the right track. They just don't have enough talented players. But basically, the only team that runs more ball screens than Nebraska is Michigan. So they're going to be a high volume ball screen offense that basically only shoots threes or tries to get to the rim. The problem is they have no one who can actually finish at the rim. So they're a terrible finishing team. And they're not a great 3-point shooting team. And they're one of the worst free throw shooting teams in the country. So to me, that says they just need some guys that can actually play.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also a dangerous recipe in that they're going to get high value shots, whether it's in transition, catch and shoot out of ball screens.
Ton of threes.
All of that. A ton of threes, right? I mean, and I'm here for that. You already know that. So I like the strategy. And I think the rest of the Big Ten should watch out for Hoiberg in the future because I think they're on the right track. I just think they need to get some better players in there.
Right.
I mean, and the roster is just crazy. Like, Hanif Cheatham played against Michigan 4 years ago in Madison Square Garden, started the game for Marquette, Then he played 2 years with Ricky Doyle, and now he's at Nebraska playing against Michigan. Like, it's just a weird roster. But I do think Cam Mack is good, and Michigan really struggled to contain ball screens and isolations against Illinois. Although Ayo is not quite Cam Mack.
Ayo.
Or Cam Mack is not quite Ayo. So that's an issue.
Speaking of, what'd you think of him on Saturday?
He's a monster. He's a dude. I wrote about him on my newsletter, and he has basically started scoring in ball screen isolation situations in ways that he never did before this month. And that's scary for the rest of the league because you just give him the ball and let him make a play. Mm-hmm. I don't really know what his ceiling is at this point.
And he's still a whatever 29% three-point shooter, but everyone he makes seems like it is just a kick right in the balls. Yeah, that was a hell of a performance. So, we want to try to keep everything in perspective and realize that, like, there is a chance that, right, they go, this is this one game suspension, they go and they win this game, he's back on Saturday, they win that game, and it's a different conversation this time a week from now. It's completely plausible.
Yeah, it's plausible. I mean, anything is plausible.
I'm just trying to, like, right, temper things because it can, it, the, first of all, right, first of all, the takes today on Twitter in the mentions, out of control, people.
You sound surprised by this.
I know, but it just wears on me sometimes.
Here's my question for you.
Yeah.
Bigger impact. Isaiah Livers re-injuring himself against Illinois, or Xavier Simpson getting suspended?
It should be Livers. Livers should be the answer to that question. 100%. Because this should be, in theory, if Xavier handles his business, whatever, you know, and, like, and is apologetic and is, you know, kind of, I think, proactive in terms of correcting whatever is going on, then it should be a one-game suspension, right? And he is back, and he is doing his part to lead this team and fulfill the role that he made for himself. Like, if he handles his business, then it should be the bigger question of Isaiah Livers and his health, and, you know, what is his status for the next game, and what is his status moving forward, and how effective is he going to be, and what is the effect on his, you know, psyche when you miss six games, you come back, you get hurt for the next game, right? That can wear on guys mentally big time.
Yeah,
You think the bigger thing right now is Xavier?
I was gonna say Livers. I think that,
oh, okay.
I think I don't see where Michigan can get to if Livers' injury continues to linger
right
longer into the season, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obviously, I guess we don't know when Xavier Simpson's suspension will be up, but just as far as, like, this team's ceiling pretty clearly relies on both guys, but I think we've seen that Michigan needs Livers in the rotation to really be what it wants to become, especially on offense. And that's not to say they don't need Simpson, but if the Livers thing is a longer-term issue, I just think that is just as damaging, if not more damaging.
The thing that really stuck out to me in the first half against Illinois was just, you almost forgot. I know he was only out six games, but you almost forgot just how much cleaner the rotation is when he's there. You know what I mean? Like, it was just, it's just so much more natural with, you know, Johns comes off the bench and he fills, you know, different roles and blah, blah, blah. And it's not just, you know, when you have to make the first substitution, it just gets immediately uncomfortable at certain areas.
I don't know
areas.
How you could watch every game Michigan played in January and forget how uncomfortable the rotation was.
I think you know what I mean. It was more just like watching it, right? You watch the first couple minutes, now here comes Johns. You're just like, man, yeah, like, this is what you almost got. Put it this way. Maybe the better way of saying it is you almost got used to what it was in those six games because he was out a while. And it's just like, it just was pretty jarring. You know, like, point being, like, take his shot making out of it, Livers, just him being on the court, it makes up just an enormous difference.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And I mean, think about what he hits that three with like 13 minutes to go. Michigan takes the lead.
Yep.
Everything was kind of just rolling in the right direction there. And things have changed significantly in what, 48 hours from that point. And that's
a great point. Like, can I steal that for my lead tomorrow night?
Unbelievable. You have to quote the Moving Screen podcast here. You got to get some clicks on here.
Yeah. Yeah. So here's another thing. Big picture. I know it is constantly, you know, the house is on fire around here. But like technically if the NCAA tournament started tomorrow, Michigan would be in it. maybe not if Isaiah Livers and Xavier Simpson aren't in the lineup, but they'd probably get in. Last I saw, they would be about like one of the last teams that don't have to go to Dayton. But this thing is obviously trending into a very precarious situation. But it is January 27th. There are 12 regular season games left, and then the Big Ten tournament. It is worth saying that there is a lot of time for a lot to change, and I have no idea where this thing's going to go, but. Right now, they're projected to go 17-14 overall, and 8-12 in the league. That's KenPom. I don't think that gets it done though. In the end,
I think Michigan would be in the NCAA tournament if it goes 8-12 in the Big Ten. I don't know that. I mean, Michigan needs its two best players to go 8-12 in the Big Ten. For KenPom sure. Doesn't have a right. Isaiah Livers, Xavier Simpson out button. that's a big difference, right? I mean. There are enough games to win that yeah. If Michigan finishes 500 over these last 12 games, they'll probably need to win one game in the Big Ten tournament mm-hmm. and they'll be an NCAA tournament team. So the it's easy to say like everything's gone sideways because they lost two home games, but right. There's still 12 games that are all mostly high value games, right? You don't have a lot of games that aren't going to count for anything. So there's plenty of opportunity. It's just like we said, Illinois was maybe not an NCAA tournament team after the non-conference because they did basically nothing. Well, now they won six games in a row, whatever it is, mm-hmm. in January, and now they look like a protected seed, right? So you can change your fortunes quickly in the Big Ten. The problem is that Michigan has shown basically nothing to make you think that it's going to change its fortunes.
Right.
But then again, confidence is a hell of a thing, right? It's not just... Like, if you start making shots, all of a sudden you start believing in yourself, and all of a sudden you win 1, 2, 3, 4 games in a row. It's not impossible. It's just, there's nothing to predict it off of right now.
What if they lose the next two games? Are you fully clocking out? Shutting down umhoops.com?
No, I'm not shutting down anything. I think that obviously if you lose 6 games in a row, it's not a great spot, right? I mean, like, it's the same thing if you look at Ohio State. They lost how many in a row? 6 out of 7. Mm-hmm. And the only wins since Christmas are over Nebraska and Northwestern. They still have every chance to make the NCAA tournament too. But I think it's easy for me or you to say that than it is to convince players on those teams that they're still a good team. And that's really like Michigan was playing against that weight of we're supposed to win this game. We're not winning this game. We need to win this game. We can't make a shot. We're still not making a shot. And that builds. So maybe, I mean, that's what you have to shake off. And that's the hardest thing to believe as a team when you go through some of these stretches, because mm-hmm. other teams in the Big Ten are going to go through the same stretch and you got to figure it out. It's hard to figure it out without your two best players.
It is. So here's a scenario for you, by the way. This is unrelated to Xavier and all of this. So I was at the bar last night in Minneapolis, right, with the Michigan State crew, and came up with this scenario. It's not out of the question. that you could have Michigan, Ohio State, and Indiana all in Dayton at the NCAA tournament. And I double checked, and yes, you can have two teams from the same conference play in the first four, which I don't know what the naming rights would cost, but I think that needs to be the moving screen invitational if we can make it happen.
Can we get Minnesota in there too?
Make it a four spot? Hell
yeah.
Sure. Let's go.
That would fix a lot of bracketing issues with the main bracket.
It would. That would be big.
So could be a nice little cheat code for the selection committee if they're listening to the pod. We're here to help.
The other possible scenario that I love is that there's a decent chance, you and I might have talked about this, I don't know if I was talking to you or someone else about this, but there's a good chance that the Thursday of the Big Ten tournament is four quad one games.
Yeah, I think those could both be playing games because of how it should set up. I would not be surprised if that's the situation, which usually, I mean, I guess it's not that crazy, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if all that happens. Yeah. What a season, huh?
Yeah.
I think it's just, I also think it's important to point out, like, Michigan has lost a couple close games, but mm-hmm. Michigan is third to last in the Big Ten in efficiency margin. That's not a great spot to be in, no matter the schedule. And yeah, you have to remember the one game Michigan won was a double overtime game where it had to defend the last possession twice before winning in the second overtime. Yep. So it's just Michigan has a lot of areas it needs to improve, and it's going to be hard to do that without its best players.
And before we get out of here, we should touch on,
I want to do a little Michigan State.
The team that in conference only games is ranked first in defensive efficiency and second in offense, Michigan State Spartans. Really nice win yesterday, I thought. Just kind of taking care of business. It's going into that that road swing. I thought just get a split, right? And that's pretty much how you need to look at any back-to-back away situation, which Michigan State, this was the first of three back-to-back road games they'll have the rest of the way. The other two are Michigan and Illinois, and then at the back end of the schedule, Maryland and Penn State. If you split those three, including this last week, which was obviously Indiana, Minnesota, like, that's your path to the Big Ten championship, right? And they got it. You know, they got it done on this one, and I thought they played a lot better. I like that Izzo switched around the starting lineup a little bit and kind of changed things up. Aaron Henry to the bench, Marcus Bingham to the bench, insert Rocket Watts, insert Malik Hall, and paid some dividends. Most importantly, though, Cassius Winston looked a lot much more like Cassius Winston than he has the last three games.
Yeah, I thought Michigan State won that game in the first 10 minutes when it really got outplayed.
Missed like shots.
Out-rebounded, everything else, missing shots, turnovers, and Minnesota just missed three after three after three after three. And that stretch, I think, gave Michigan State life, and then Michigan State just suffocated Minnesota. Like, they just shut that team down with their defense, and mm-hmm. Minnesota just looked like Minnesota quit two-thirds of the way through that game. Mm-hmm. I've not seen a guy run back or walk back on defense more than Daniel Arturo did after he would, like, miss a shot around the rim and then just stop and walk back on defense. Like, and that's it. I mean, that's credit to Michigan State for weathering that. Like, Minnesota came out flying, crashing mm-hmm. the glass, doing all these things, getting second chances. Then Michigan State took the punch. They've weathered the punch in other road games. They know what's coming. They managed to hold in there, and then they just took control of that game.
Yeah, it could have very easily been another 12-2 at the first media timeout road situation, which you saw at Purdue, which you saw at Indiana. But yeah, missed shots help. Minnesota finished 5-for-28 on threes, and a number of those were pretty decent looks early. And then they just started chucking. It just turned into kind of patino
Marcus
ball.
Marcus Carr.
Right.
Do it for the fantasy team, man. I expect better than 3-of-14.
But I did, from Michigan State, there was when Minnesota got it to 9 in the second half and the building started going, right? And it was a pretty big game. It's a top 15 game or whatever Michigan State's ranked on their home campus. It was a Sunday. The place was pretty much full. They're retiring Willie Burton's number at halftime. It was the error was a little weird because everyone there knew about the Kobe Bryant news except for the guys playing, which was a weird dynamic. But when they got to 9 in the second half, suddenly it was okay. This, you know, you knew a run was coming because this is what's going to happen, and that was a big response by Cassius leading the kind of the charge there. I think their first play when it got to 9 was maybe like a baseline cut by Xavier Tillman and Winston found him. And it was a play that Xavier Tillman would not have made a year ago at this time. But kind of showed his growth and he finished that one off. They got a stop on the other end. They came back down. I think Cash hit a 3 or something like that. And it was, right, cut it to 9, and then, but Michigan State showed what a team that can win a conference championship looks like. It was a big-time answer. A lot of teams would have kind of gotten on their heels a little bit, and instead, they attacked them.
Yeah, Michigan, I think it was the best game Cash has probably played since
Michigan, by far.
Michigan, Minnesota, back-to-back at home. He played great against Minnesota in East Lansing. I think he had 27, but he was hitting shots. He looked confident. I thought it was a great all-around game from him and basically what you expect and what you're going to need for Michigan State to win games on the road, right?
Yeah.
You can win games at home when Cassius plays like a B-plus game for Cassius Winston.
Mm-hmm.
You need the A game to win on the road from Cassius Winston. That's what you got at Minnesota, and Minnesota just had no answer.
Yeah, and I mentioned Xavier Tillman, and I wrote about him today. It was just he is, I think, very quietly the last month. I think he's really settled in and kind of become the guy that he was supposed to be. Do you remember all the talk early in the season where he couldn't catch the ball? He was throwing it off the rim at times. He kind of just seemed a little scattershot and people were freaking out a little bit. I think that is such a distant memory at this point. And the fact that they can make a lineup change that involves inserting two freshmen into the starting lineup. And, like, if you watched him closely in that game, I mean, he's just telling those guys where to be, what to go, who to pick up, who's on what. I mean, he's just shouting all this stuff from the back line there. And it's just the fact that he's able to kind of be that, you know, you can change everything around him, but as long as he's that kind of foundational piece, I don't think that can be – the importance of that can be overstated. And he's a stud, man. He's just a super impressive player.
So I went on Alex's pod last week, and we were talking about Michigan State, Maryland, whatever else.
Rivers,
we were talking
Rivers.
About Xavier Tillman, and we didn't talk about Nate Reavers. But I use the D word with Xavier Tillman. Do you see any Draymond in his development? And do you think
Michigan State's entire team play in college? I don't.
How can you cover Michigan State?
What do you mean?
You're going to be banned from the next press conference up there.
Quite easily. I'm fine with that. I got yelled at Indiana, so I can get yelled at again.
Do you see next year's Michigan State team just being built entirely around Xavier Tillman? Like his playmaking
1,000%, yes.
In that, absolutely. But like it's a different team, right? It's not him in the post. It's him being able to make plays from around the free throw line that has
all
completely changed
yeah,
what Michigan State can do offensively.
He plays facing the basket, you know, and like he can go down, like, he can go downhill, he can catch, he can finish, he can even dribble it a little bit now. And like that's exactly an example was that cut that he made. It was just a play where not a lot of guys his size move the way he did on that play and catch and finish so clean. No, I totally agree with you. I mean, this is his team next year, assuming he is back.
If he's not
I don't think that is assumed by any means.
No, I would never assume that really for any player in college basketball. But I just see that more and more with how he's grown as a passer and playmaker, and that's not stuff he did a lot of last year.
He had five assists?
Unless I'm misremembering. He had five assists the last two games. He had. Yeah, I mean, he's averaging like four or five assists a game.
And if you watch him defensively, I mean, he's just he's just so smart, and he mixes it up. The amount of time, you know, obviously, as anyone listening here, especially 45 minutes into this, already knows, like, your post defense in this league is legit. Like, you better be ready every night to be able to plant your feet and defend the blocks. Because there's the amount of, you know, back to the basket basketball in the Big Ten right now is crazy. But if you really watch him, the way that he mixes it up, some possessions, he'll front guy, then he's on his back the next time, and kind of he wants him to kind of get his feet moving and stuff like that. Then he's back on his front. Then he's locking hips and banging. He just makes guys work their asses off. And in the last 10 minutes of games, I think you do see some of that residual of guys get a little bit frustrated, worn down, quitting, walking back down the court, like you just talked about Daniel Oturu.
You know who wasn't trying to work for 40 minutes against Xavier Tillman? I'll tell you. Daniel Oturu. Just, I was disappointed in him, especially because I think he's really shown potential of being great. And I didn't think I think he got, like you say, outworked, yeah, punked by Tillman, and just didn't, like, he was just committing lazy fouls at the end of the game. Like, he didn't seem to really want to be in for the full 40 minutes. And that's disappointing for Minnesota at home.
Like, where is Tillman? I have no idea what, like, how people talk about him outside of here, but, like, because he's never going to put up the 28-point game, right, which Garza does, which Oturu does, which Jalen Smith, he just did it to Indiana, and then told them all about it on the way off the court. But, like, Tillman, that'll never be him, right? He'll score 20 maybe here or there, but it's always going to be 17, 11, and
six,
you know.
And but I think there's an appreciation for that. I think it's a little lost in the Cassius Winston appreciation, though, right? Like,
sure,
how many teams have two guys who are really like national commodities, so to speak, right? Like, yeah, it's always like, yeah, well, it's his team, or yeah, it's his team,
right?
And I think that's part of maybe why he's a bit underappreciated. I do think, like, if he comes back next year, has all the makings to be, like, put together an All-American type season.
Absolutely.
And I think it would be – basically, he's doing a lot of things that if he did them again next year without Cassius Winston on the team, all of a sudden people would be fawning over him, right? Yeah. So that's how I kind of look at it.
I mean, hell, Tom Izzo would tell you right now, just solely based on his ball screen defense, that he should be an All-American this year.
I would say he's Michigan State's most important player.
You could certainly make the case. And the fact that you can make that case is crazy because of who Cassius Winston is.
Yeah, I think it speaks also more to who's behind both, but and what you get out of mm-hmm. both, right? Like, but they need him on the court all the time. And he's done everything that you really can ask for him over the last couple months.
Yeah, and it's fun watching Michigan State right now because I feel like if you would have told us 2 weeks ago that they would get to 7-2, just based on what's happening in the rest of the league, I do kind of feel like you would think that they would have a two game lead in the standings at this point, but they don't, because out of nowhere Illinois is doing what it is doing, and it's a real race. Maryland right there at 6-3, Rutgers.
Yeah,
right,
I don't think it's just Illinois.
Right? No doubt.
I think Maryland has to be taken. I take Maryland a lot more seriously than Rutgers right now, mm-hmm. Just because of the parts of the schedule they both played.
You could make a case to take Iowa more seriously than Rutgers because Iowa's right there too.
I would make that case, but it's still Iowa, so I'm a little nervous.
We know your feelings on Iowa.
I'm a little nervous to make that case considering one of their three losses is to Nebraska, but. Yeah, it's a wide open race, and like right now, Michigan State's projected at 14-6, but Illinois and Maryland are the two at 13-7 right there, who will have every opportunity to be in that mix. And they both still have at least one game. You know, Maryland plays Michigan State twice, so
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's games to decide the championship, right?
And you know, Illinois already holds the one win over Maryland early in the season when they just stole that game by 1 point, and it's crazy. You know, that game was December 7th, And you remember watching it, and I mean, Maryland just pissed that game away. And to now look back on it, because you just didn't expect, it was the flipped it. Illinois pissed that game away. They completely had that game locked, and now you look back on it, and it's just, who would have thought, 6 weeks later that game is as important as it was, and that goes to show you those December games, man. They count just as much as the other ones.
Jalen Smith, 4 straight monster MVPs in a row.
Monster numbers.
57% from 3 in Big Ten games. Top 5 or 6 in rebounding and offense and defense. Blocking shots, just crushing everything in a way that I didn't really think he knew he was capable of a month ago. So that's scary for the Big Ten too.
Yes. And I have to make a confession of being a complete moron and asshole, but because when I wrote the story about Tillman today, I said most onlookers would probably, you know, assume or label the top 3 bigs in the league as Oturu, Garza, and Tillman, not in any particular order. And then this morning, I'm up and I'm looking at Jalen Smith's numbers, and I'm like, shit, I might have been one short in that case. How would you? So you did that great newsletter piece where you had the rankings of the bigs at the time. That would have been what, 2 or 3 weeks ago?
Yeah, I'll point out it's before this 4-game tear by Jalen Smith that would change.
Absolutely.
It was, you wouldn't have really looked at him as that high up on the list, just considering everything else. The guy I have the hardest time dealing with is Luka Garza, because I think he's a big reason that I was not good on defense, but his offensive numbers are like unheard of. Mm-hmm. So what do you do with a guy like that? I don't know. I mean, he's like, his upside's limited compared to a two-way guy, right? Like Xavier Tillman and Jalen Smith, Daniel Oturu even, they're net positives on defense. And
sure,
varying degrees of positives on offense. Luka Garza is a net negative on offense, and it just probably the most productive offensive player in the league. So how do you grade him? Where do you rate him? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, here's how I look at Garza's defense. It's never going to be good. He moves like a slug, we'll say. And but he does block some shots. He does rebound a little bit. But more importantly, that guy plays his ass off, right? Like, I understand he has physical limitations defensively, but it would be a lot harder to stomach if he was kind of just loafing it just kind of half-assing it and just kind of looking down to get and back.
Does looking like you try hard mean you're a good
defensive player? Whatever, man. I am not saying he's a good defensive player at all. But I'm saying he does try to make things difficult for his opposing bigs in the league.
So can you be one of the best big men in the conference if your team has the second worst 2-point defense in the conference?
When you put 28 on Rutgers, when you put 33 on Michigan, when you put 27 on Northwestern, 34 on Penn State, yes. 44 on Michigan.
The best 2-point defense in the Big Ten: Illinois, Michigan State, Minnesota, Rutgers, Maryland. Those teams all have great defensive bigs. And 4 of the guys who you would say are in the mix for that big man ranking, right? Like, they have guys who control the paint, whether it's Sticks, whether it's Tillman, whether it's Kofi. Like, those teams all have great interior defense. Teams at the bottom of the league, if you're in the bottom in 2-point defense, if only Nebraska allows a better shooting percentage on 2s, that has to come down to your center, I think. And I know Iowa has other defensive issues, mm-hmm. but come on. That's just like, I don't know how.
They also play zone how much of the time?
So he's standing right in front of the basket.
Well, I don't think you can't sit here and suggest, though, that he's not one of the best bigs in the league.
He's one of the best. I just don't know how you compare him to two-way bigs.
Let's rank him before we get out of here, just for shits and gigs.
All right, we're going to do a draft. You get the first pick.
I get the first pick. I'm taking Tillman.
All right. I'll just take Oturu, but I just need to say that I was very disappointed with his performance on Sunday night. I'm just going to point that out again.
I think that's the right pick. All right. So I'm third. I will take... God, it's really hard with seeing what Jalen Smith is doing right now. I'm gonna take Jalen Smith.
All right. Well, I'm taking Garza over Wesson because I'm not Caleb Wesson guy.
Man, I'm tempted to take Kofi.
I would take Kofi. Yeah, and then I guess you go Wesson, who I have a hard time getting excited about. They have some similar defensive issues. He can shoot it. I don't know. I have a hard time figuring out what to do with Caleb Wesson.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and they're just playing so ridiculously poorly.
I guess you go Teske in there, like another guy hard to make sense of at this point.
Absolutely. At this point, if we're picking him, you got. Did you just take Wesson?
I'll take Wesson. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, for me, the argument right now is it would be either Watkins or Teske. I would probably take Teske. Forget about Travion Williams. Probably Teske. I would take Teske. Yeah,
maybe no one's taken.
Do you Mike want? Can, wait a sec. What do you think of the 3-point shooting
for Teske?
Yes.
I think some threes are okay.
Mm-hmm.
I think playing him at the four next to Austin Davis is going to lead to him taking threes that you don't need him taking. And that's what I think you saw late in that game against Illinois. I don't think he needs to be taking 6 threes a game.
Right.
I don't know what John Teske as a power forward is giving you. And it's going to give you more John Teske 3-point attempts because that's exactly what you're going to get when that,
mm-hmm.
when he's there, he's out there spacing the floor, right? Like, you build offense around the four-man taking threes. We're going to say Brandon Johns needs to take those threes. Then you're going to say John Teske needs to take those threes. But I don't know, man. It was a tough week. I mean, he was, 1-for-10 this week?
Yep.
He in a lot of Michigan's best wins, he's hit threes. So does that mean Michigan's just not actually that good or that I don't know. I think there's a balance. I think 2 or 3 a game is perfectly fine because it forces the other team to defend him, especially when it's pulling a 5-man away from the basket. I just don't like him as a power forward.
No.
The decision to go 2 bigs down the stretch against Illinois was worse than John Teske shooting 6 threes. I mean, I just didn't understand that. And
how many minutes did they have that lineup out there?
I think it was just the last 4 minutes.
That's what I thought. Yeah. It was just a very weird time to yeah, yeah, a pretty weird call to just suddenly kind of roll with that. So, all right, I don't think we need to finish the draft. It's what Trace Jackson Davis, Travion, shout out Reavers, Miles Johnson. I'm sure I'm forgetting someone. Ryan Young. I don't know. I think I'm out of big. Oh, Matt Harms.
I don't know how to say the kid at Nebraska's name.
Even Udrygo, something like that, right? Is that
there,
his name?
There you go.
There you go.
People come to the pod for pronunciation.
All right. We are at an hour. We will wrap it up with that. You will notice, because of today's pressing news, I didn't even hit you all with the sales pitch in the beginning of the episode. But if you are not subscribed to UM Hoops, make sure you are doing so. Dylan does great, great, great work over there. Anything special going on this week?
Ooh, figuring out what the hell's going on. That's the plan.
Great answer. All right. Over on The Athletic, I have a column on Xavier Simpson. Get a little bit into the idea of accountability and what's kind of going on with that whole situation. I also have a story on Xavier Tillman and kind of just his balancing act of what he means for Michigan State, what he has going on in his personal life. He's expecting his second child in a month. Yes, for those people asking, if it happens to coincide with a game, he will miss the game and go see the birth of his child, which is hilarious that that's some people's lead concern. I'm glad people know
the big questions to ask.
That's right. So check out that story, though. He was great to talk with after the game at Illinois. Have a story from Io Tsumu, what he did at Michigan the other day. And then we talked a little bit about NCAA tournament stuff early. If you're really into that, I would strongly suggest checking out a piece I did over the weekend on the Big Ten and the dynamics at play of the, you know, 10 seeds possible, 12 bids possible, what that would even look like in an NCAA tournament picture and what it would take to get there, and will anyone be left standing at the end. This will obviously be the conversation for the next 6 weeks, right? So if you want a little preface to what that all is going to look like, give that story a read, and that'll do it for this week. Anything else from you?
No, what's that? You're feeling extra fancy today, sipping on red wine for this podcast.
You like that?
I feel a little outclassed.
I hit my concierge lounge up here on the 10th floor of the Marriott in Lincoln. Got a little glass of red wine. Got to unwind.
Fancy.
Today got crazy.
It's fancy. All right.
Wasn't expecting
just
to be
point
working
out how fancy you are on this.
Wasn't
podcast.
Expecting to be working the phones at 8 o'clock this morning when find out what the hell's going on. And oh Jesus! But all right, that'll do it for this week. Very much appreciate everyone listening. Be sure to tip your bartenders and your servers. Good night.